Welcome everybody to this call. This is John Kramer with bookmarket.com, and online with me is Amy Bates-Tumpf with Giftlist Media, and I did want to welcome her. I think we're going to have a good time here with the call, and so I'd like to start, if I can get back to the page, with a couple of questions from some people from the web. Well, they're more specific questions. Amy, why don't we start first by, you know, I know that Giftlist Media maintains a media database of people that are interested in, they do gift new product information and gift ideas. And you have two different ones, one for the Christmas holidays, winter holidays, and another one for the spring holidays. I believe it's, what, Mother's Day, Father's Day, graduation?
Right. Well, we cover the gift list for holiday covers the November, December editorial calendars for primarily gift guides, but any holiday-related feature is going to get covered in there as well as year-round information. We want to make sure we get all the holiday-specific information, but if they don't particularly cover holidays for any reason or they don't do gifts, we still get their product review in there. So we want all consumer product review editors from consumer magazines included. And then the gift list for spring is the April, May, and June, and we usually will get a couple July in there as well. It just kind of depends on what they've got going. But that covers the Mother's Day, Father's Day, graduation, prom, wedding, you name it. There's so much stuff that goes on in spring.
The summer bikini season.
Yeah, well, fashion comes out in April. That's why we changed it from the moms, dads, and grads to spring so that we could pull in the April editorial calendar.
How many people are on each of those lists?
They both run between 1,200 and 1,500 editors are listed. It's because it covers a broad range. We're looking at all consumer media outlets for those, from national glossy magazines down to the top 250 daily newspapers to regionally syndicated radio, as well as your broadcasts. And we cover a pretty big range of broadcasts. It's not just Oprah and you know, CBS This Morning. We're looking at HGTV and Fine Living, you know, like cable production houses that have small shows, but we want to cover as much consumer product as we can. And
you don't do local radio then?
No, not local radio. The list should be thousands of contacts
long. No.
And
no,
we don't
no,
do local
fine.
TV either. And I think that
smart.
I think that people who are in that local area know who those people are. It isn't a value to anyone. If you live in a particular town, that local radio station is someplace where you can just, like, drive over there and walk in the front door. And if you've got a local story, they're interested. And the same with very local TV. I'm in the L.A. area, so local TV here is a little bit more expansive than it might be in the rest of the country. But most people who have a local story can easily pick up the phone and let their local news know, and a media list of that. Those contacts are no good beyond their 20-mile radius. So we don't include those. It just sort of clogs the list up. But we get down pretty small. The top 250 daily newspapers gets to about less than 50,000 in circulation, and we go down to 25,000 in circulation for regional magazines. So anyone that has a product that isn't necessarily nationally distributed, there's plenty of fodder. And if you've got a dozen or two dozen retail establishments that that carry your product, you could still put together a decent regional, multi-regional campaign. So
right,
go down
right.
pretty small even still.
Can you give us a couple of key tips for pitching the new product editors, I guess that would be, or the gift editors, or who are the people who are actually on the database? Are they covering mainly new products, or are they lifestyle editors?
It's a range. We're looking for, obviously, a new product editor is key. You know, any outlet that gives someone that particular title, we're on them. That's very important for us. But, you know, if they don't have a new products editor, then we're going to look for Well, for the holiday list, we want the holiday gift guide editor, and that title floats. You know, it isn't always an enviable position. They don't all want to be assigned that task because it's a big one, and, you know, you've got your office becomes overrun with press kits and samples, and it can be a bit overwhelming, and sometimes it goes to someone who's very senior, and sometimes it goes to the new kid on the block. So it just kind of depends, and oftentimes it isn't given to the same person every year. So that title is specific for the holiday, and we definitely want to pull all those guys, and the new products editors as well are important. But if those titles aren't assigned out to anyone, then it's really just a bit of a digging process. And we have basic lifestyle editors and health and fitness editors and food editors and the tech editor, there's a, you know, obviously there are a half a dozen or so main and obvious titles that are going to cover products, and it's just figuring out whether they do or not and figuring out if they want PR or they just get everything off the wire. And, you know, that's what we do. We're doing, it's a research list. Everyone on the list has been spoken to by someone on my staff and interviewed with a pretty lengthy battery of questions. So there might be an outlet where we might have four or five, like a Woman's Day or a Lucky, where they're pretty bifurcated in how they assign their projects and how they do their research in-house. And sometimes it's very consolidated. One person might pull all the new products, make some preliminary decisions, and redistribute them out to their independent or associate editors or even freelancers. So every outlet kind of has their own style, and we figure that out as we do the research and things change. So that's why we get them on the phone. But like you said, you know, if there is no new products editor, definitely a lifestyle editor is going to get a phone call from us.
So then back to the original question, which was some pitching tips on how would you approach them? What's the best way? What's the timing on it? Things like that.
Okay, the pitching season for holiday starts probably at the beginning of May and can go all the way up until, you know, New Year's Eve. It just depends on what you're pitching and who you're pitching to. The earlier deadlines are obviously going to be for the nationally distributed, you know, high-gloss magazines. These guys need lots of time. If they have high circulations, they're going to get lots and lots of submissions. So more than they would get for August or March or some other random month. Holiday is obviously a time when most people are going to try to get the bang for their buck for their, in terms of PR. They're going to invest more in their own PR campaigns for holiday, and that obviously translates into more work for the editors on the other side. So they need to give themselves plenty of leeway or they'll never get through all that material. Making those decisions, putting together a good holiday gift guide that is well-balanced and looks good in print, you know, it has to all photograph well, and they have to make sure that the vendors that they're working with, they, you know, the products that they're featuring are going to be available and they've got plenty in stock. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So they need to give themselves lots of leeway, and they generally will say that they would love to get all their PR in by, you know, mid-July. That is I think for a lot of these really top tier, if they could get it in before 4th of July week when everyone goes on vacation, they'd be thrilled. But they still take submissions into August. There's no reason that you would, you know, close up shop just because you didn't get your press kits out by 4th of July weekend. You know, earlier
can
just
you grab me a pen, please?
Is a little bit better.
Oh, right next to you in the basket. The basket.
That's okay. That's those guys. And, you know, sometimes we get we get a range. You know, we might have like Elle or Glamour last year. They didn't even want to hear about holiday until after 4th of July weekend. We couldn't even get their holiday gift guide editor on the phone to talk to us about what types of products they were interested in. And, you know, so sometimes they throw us for a loop. You know, that's different every year. But there's certain things, you know, if you're looking for, I know this is specifically about books, but everything has its own timing, and you need to make sure that you've got certain materials available. Some, you know, in terms of the consumer products, they don't want galleys. They want finished product because it's a little bit different than maybe someone who's a straight book review editor. They might take something a little bit earlier in the process. It's the same, you know, like a test kitchen. They need your product way earlier because they got to develop a recipe around it, or they've got to try your recipe in their kitchen, and they only have their chef once a month on, you know, the third Tuesday. So everyone has this schedule that you've got to try to figure out well in advance so that you come in with an at the right time. And a new product, like if you were a lifestyle editor and you were putting together a holiday gift guide, these people come up with some unusual ideas about what their theme is because they're looking to sell magazines. They don't care about selling your product. That makes no difference to them whatsoever. Their shoot has to look great. You know, we're still like talking about these early deadlines in the high gloss magazines. That page has to pop. It has to feel right. It has to look right. It has to be the style of the outlet. You know, if it's a high-tech magazine or if it's a teen, you know, Cosmo Girl or what, any and everything in between, if it's a very homey Women's Day, Country Living, the way that page lays out and how these things are photographed, they have to look good together. And it's sometimes what, you know, it, a shop owner, you know, an owner, an author, a PR person, anyone who's pitching them, doesn't always consider that we already have a red striped product. You know, we can't put your red striped book jacket next to this red striped chair because it just, it looks funny and we don't understand it. It doesn't look right. And that might seem like a really unusual response to say we can't cover your book because it has a red stripe on the dust jacket, but these are all things that happen to people all the time.
You have no control over that
because,
you know, you may have a wonderful book and maybe one they'd like to cover, but it has an orange cover and it doesn't work against that red stripe either.
Exactly. Sometimes a solid red jacket will get you good for holiday because lots of people, or silver or green, you know, I mean, if that's something that you have, then you can always pitch that. Size is also sort of an interesting thing, too. It just kind of depends. Like a home magazine, a large, awesome, you know, coffee table book, regardless of what's in there, is might do better than like a, you know, just released in paperback because that's just not what the home editors are interested in.
Right.
I mean, unless it's specifically a home magazine. But for holiday, they're probably most likely going to cover that some other time. I mean, a holiday, we're looking for guests. If something's like long and skinny and will fit into a stocking, I mean, that's your angle in some ways. You know what I mean? So there's more than just the topic and content of the book. You have to also think about what does this book look like.
Again, the same design might work perfectly well in one magazine because it's just right for their particular style and the way that they like to look and feel. And another magazine would go, ooh.
Exactly. And title is the same thing. Also, because you have to also remember that you're not pitching the fiction editor, you know, or the book reviews editor who's really dealing with the content of your book and the topic of your book. We're talking holiday gifts here, and we're also thinking about what they look like and how they photograph, and it's just a different way to think about your book. You have to think about your book as a product that's going to be presented in a totally different way. I mean, it might be given as a gift and never read. I mean, I know it's horrible to think about it that way, but there are the realities of what gift giving has become and how we approach gift giving, and a lot of it is just entertainment. You know, it's not, people love to look through holiday gift guides, and it gives them a lot of really good ideas, but they're not buying for themselves, so the desire to actually read the book, it doesn't have to resonate with the purchaser. And, you know, it's just something to think about. And I think that that's something to definitely consider, pitching the way the book looks and title. If you have a very, very straightforward title versus a very fun title, maybe something that has a little innuendo to it or something that's just a little offbeat, something that has slang in it, your pitch should definitely emphasize that with the outlets that will appeal to. So those are, you know, and it's definitely judge the book by its cover when it comes to this. When you get to the other spectrum, and we'll move forward just a little bit in the deadlines, when you sort of get into like midsummer and early fall, you're looking at wire service and syndicated columnists, and then you're moving into the daily papers, and then you're also moving into broadcast as you move closer into as fall starts to hit October. You know, but you're pitching broadcast well after you've seen Country Living's Christmas tree at the grocery store on the cover. So, you know, the Glossies have got that Christmas issue out before you've bought your Halloween pumpkin. So you've got a long pitching season here, and you're pitching different ideas and different concepts. Now, newspapers often don't run pictures, so they are much more interested in the topic of the book and not necessarily the nitty-gritty of the detail if it's a holiday gift guide, but definitely they want to know who the audience of that book is going to be, who's your target customer, and you want to pitch to that audience. You want to make sure that you're looking at it less in terms of the red stripe on the cover and more in terms of what's great about this book and why, who are you going to give this book to. It's the gift recipient tends to take over a little bit more. And it does, not that it isn't key in the magazines, because they're not going to put stuff in there that is no appeal to their audience whatsoever or people that associate with their readership. But because they're not so concerned about photographing the book, they're interested in why it's going to be a fun gift. And then the overarching for everything, all journalists from the early deadlines to the late deadlines to the high-gloss magazines to the regional, publications, whether it's a regional sports magazine with only 30,000 distribution or, Oprah's magazine with a million. So they all want to be able to find the new product, something that hasn't been done already, that's not been covered, that isn't overexposed. I mean, everyone needs something new. They are journalists, whether they're, it's not hard-hitting, Film at 11 breaking news, but it's still, they are journalists and they still are looking for news. And pitching your product as something new and unique and different with some kind of newsworthy angle is going to set you apart from everyone else. It's not just, here's my book, it's great. Doesn't it have a lovely polka dotted cover? And, with that will just look so good on the pages of Cosmo Girl. What is so great about this book? What are you writing about, something that no one else has written about, or do you have a different opinion about it? Are you controversial in some way? Are you offering information that has never been collected in the single volume ever before and never will again because it was so horrible to do? What is great about this book and why does everyone have to have it is your standard place to start. And then once you sort of have maybe bulleted out a whole bunch of reasons that this is different from everything else on the market or better than everything else on the market, then I would try to look at all those bullet points and tie them into some kind of trend or some regional angle. If you're looking nationally or, national publication or syndicated columnist, a wire service, they really, really want trends. That's what they report on. They're reporting on news, and they're reporting on consumer products. They're reporting on consumer purchasing trends. So knowing what those trends are is definitely going to help you. And there's tons of places to RSS trend information. You can just start Googling consumer buying trends and you will have hundreds of listings to just open up and take a look. And doing that homework is going to help, because if you can tie it into a trend, and there's no reason why you can't make up your own trend. I mean, if you see a trend happening, just because it hasn't been reported on doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And if you can substantiate it, heck, three's a trend. So if you can write a compelling argument for it, I think that you should go for it and put that out there and not feel that you need to have, eight professors quoting that this is actually a documented trend, because probably by then that trend is over. So putting it into a newsworthy context is going to definitely help. And you want to make sure that news is the right news for that outlet. The New York Times is interested in different news than, Word Up or a music magazine. So that's, you have to make sure that you speak the language of the people who are at that outlet. And you're going to have to gear your pitch letters and maybe even tweak your press release in a way that's going to write a compelling story for them, or not necessarily write their story, but tell your own story that is going to compel them to write a story about you, or at least mention or include you in some listing about how great gifts. So I think that's
the I did something like that with a semi gift book that I did, the Turntable Illusions, which first of all I did a red and green cover because it was coming out during the right before the winter holidays. So I thought, what the heck, I have to have some color on it, why not red and green? And but I also included in the pitch, b- both a photo of the cover in color, but I also did a black and white with the black and white patterns that are in the book. This is a book of patterns that you put them on a record turntable. They create illusions. So I did a photograph of a record turntable with illusions sort of scattered around it and one on it. And I found out that some of the media liked the color pictures, some liked the product in use. And
right.
And some actually did both. Sun-Times actually used, Chicago Sun-Times used both of them. Because they used one as sort of a lead-in in the front of the lifestyle section and another one in the actual article. And
the newspapers like those black and, like to see what something looks like in black and white in case they do have room to sneak in a picture.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why even if you don't include all that, nowadays you can put a lot of that into your online media kit and you don't have to have, even send it out, but the media are quite comfortable in most cases, I believe, if you can help me resubstantiate that just by going to the online media,
right.
Photos and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I think that's not a problem at all. I think that they appreciate that very much because, you know, the more work that you can do for them, the happier they are. No one wants to, you know, troll through a million attachments or go to your website and have to navigate through pages and pages. Journalists want to go to a central location. When you're talking about what images to include, what not to include, I mean, we're getting more into putting together a media kit, which is a week-long seminar, but the better and more versatile, high quality, high res images that you have available for the media are going to hedge your bet over someone who does not have print ready images. That's just a plain and simple. You need to get, and they're not expensive to get. We coordinate images for people all the time. You need to get as many different types of images of your product that you can. And with a book, it's not like you're investing in 100 different pictures. If you have illustrations inside the book, yes, it'd be great to have those available. If you just have a picture of the cover, sometimes that's sufficient. But you want
quality
images should be available. And online, downloadable, instant. Everyone loves instant stuff.
And so with online, you can do an author photo even, or even a photo of the author holding the book, or you can give all kinds of different options, and
exactly.
They can be very high quality because no one's going to click on that high quality image. So you can give a low quality res just to give them an idea of what it looks like, and then if they click on it, it takes them to a high quality res picture so that they can actually download it and actually use it.
Right. You can thumbnail a page of all the images that are available on your site with just a link to click on that image, and then it will download the high-res JPEG. Those are sort of really basic types of press kit materials. And I think for books, too, the press kit materials are a little bit different than maybe, a piece of apparel or a beauty product or something along those lines, or a tech image.
Right.
Tech images, it's great to have, they got all these, sometimes they show 360, the cell phone rotates, that kind of stuff. The press kit for a high-tech item is going to be filled with specs and other reviews and ratings and lots of tech details. A book press kit, as opposed to maybe like an article of clothing, is going to have more in it. It's going to, you definitely should have great quotes from the book. You definitely should have excerpts from the book that are all available in formats that are not an image, like a PDF or a JPEG, because retyping is not fun. I understand there's copyright issues, but if you're submitting this information out and you've selected quotes that it's okay for them to use in a review, then put them in Word. For goodness sake, let's make it easy for them to just like mouse click and cut and paste into what they're working on, what they're writing on for their senior editor. The last thing you want to do is make it difficult or slow your editors down. And so the table of contents...
This would be true for the online news release, too, that it should be cut and pasteable just in case they do use your news release as is or
I think so.
Something like that, rather than doing it as a PDF, which is often
right.
the case.
Yes. When we do press release distribution here, we do it in an HTML email, like a constant contact. We use Emma, and those are all cut and pasteable. But sometimes we'll send it out depends on what the product is. If they don't have an image, I'm more likely to send it out plain text. It doesn't have to look super fancy. I think as long as it's readable, they're not going to read down that far if they're not interested in the product anyway. So plain text is great because it is just cut and paste right into their Word document. But it's really nice to give. They might not want to necessarily cut and paste your whole press release because you're not necessarily writing the story that they would write. You're writing a story that you're presenting to the media. They're writing a story that they're presenting to the general population of their outlets. So it's a little bit different. That's why anytime you can pull excerpts from the book that really just, you know, and you might need to pull a whole bunch of them so that you can pick and choose which one or two you're going to send to which outlet because, you know, the outlets all have their own personality, as we've talked about. So going through your book and finding really great nuggets of text to put in your online media kit or, you know, in your email press release or in your hard copy press kit, whatever you're, however you're distributing your information, is going to help. And like you said, with those images, too, it's not just the cover of the book. It's pictures, you know, it's what does the book look like inside. And the pictures of the author photo must have a picture of the author. Get out there and get your picture taken. And like I said, take a picture with your book. Take a picture outside with the book, inside with the book, eating the book, standing on the book. I mean, there's just, you never know what the editors want. So if you've got a photographer for the day, exploit their time as much as you can and get whatever you can get out of it. That's going to definitely make it's so much easier. And we have editors say all the time, if we have two products that for us it's a toss-up and someone has downloadable high-res images, easy-to-grab quotes, a great author photo, a great author bio, things that we can cut and paste and be done earlier, which product are we going to pick? That's a no-brainer. So they say they're willing to say that to us, so I would imagine that that is relatively the truth.
Anytime
overall.
You can make it easier for the editor, the more likely they are to pick your subject or what
right.
you're doing. We had one question come in by the web that said, what's the name of that trend website? I don't think you named it a website, did you?
Oh, I don't think I did name it. I can
you said
I can
the,
click
the
over
Google.
To my email. Yeah, let me get, I don't want to misname it, so let me see if I can. I think it's called trendwatching.com, but I will.
Oh, there is one. Okay. I
go. Here's a few that I get. I get Brand Channel, and that's BrandChannel.com. It's sort of like it's brand news, that kind of big brands and little brands,
right.
but brands. There's trendwatching.com, TrendWatching.com. There's a newsletter that comes out, Iconoculture. That's IconoCulture.com. And springwise.com, SpringWise.com. These guys all cover trends. They're overlapping in some ways. And trend watching.
And of course, if you watch the celebrity bloggers and so on, you see what the swebs are, the trends that they have.
Oh, right. Go to Technorati, type in trend blogs, and, you know, have at it for the top 20. I mean, there's two. That's the thing where it's if RSS, I'd have to go in and sort of dig and get the exact launching place.
Oh,
no,
that's fine. That's enough. I mean, people should be able to do some of that on their own.
The blogging, you can't keep up with it. There's so many people blogging on trends. But you know, I mean, if you've written a book about a particular topic, the way in which that topic fits into popular culture should be so apparent to you that having to dig for trends would sort of surprise me. But you don't want to. You need to present it in a way that's probably a little. You need to You need to kind of maybe dumb it down a little bit. You know so much about the topic of your book that you can't assume that someone coming at your press release day one, they haven't read your book. They don't. You know, I mean, they're not an expert like you are. So you need to maybe present it in a way that's just a little bit more, eighth grade reading levels. as they say. So
yeah,
that might be more of the challenge than actually finding the trend, because you've written a book. I mean, you clearly feel that what you're writing about has some place in culture today. Someone has an interest in this, so you are not the one and only person that has this interest. So,
personally, I think I'd rather invent a trend than follow
it. I agree. Yeah, that's what I said. Three's a trend. By the time it has been blogged about, it is over. Or soon to be over. And what you need to also realize is you're working with a huge lead time. You're pitching a trend that people have been talking about since January, and you're pitching this in May. Well, do you think by the time next January rolls around, that's still a current trend? So that's why you need to, like, think about the trends, something that's been done already and is so overused. By the time this thing hits the presses, you're definitely behind.
Not only for broadcast, but definitely
for the long lead magazine.
I know that in Entertainment Weekly, I think every week they have something about something, the hot trend, the so-so, and the bygone trend. And every week they say, three different items. This is so gone, this is now.
And they
do that weekly kind of thing. And so you get right away how quickly trends can change. And certainly the minute you've seen it in a monthly magazine, it's already gone, in a sense.
Right. It's the trend of today. And you're pitching trends for, 6 months from now. So it's tricky. And, that's why I said feel free to make up a trend. You don't have to, like I said earlier, you don't need, 10 experts to substantiate it. You're the expert, for goodness sake. You can substantiate it. You've written a book. Even if you've written a book of fiction, you still have immersed yourself in the characters and where those characters are and what they're doing. And, you've written it because you think someone wants to read it, and people want to read it because they're interested in it. If they're interested in it, it is a trend. So
just
figuring out how it is appealing to the population isn't of itself related to trend. It's just making it a statement, actually turning it around by saying people are becoming more and more interested in X, Y, and Z. And that, there's your trend. And developing it in sort of a fun and interesting way for each outlet is really all they're looking for. They're not doing, you're not writing a term paper.
Let's take a couple questions now. I know there's one online that somebody sent in, and this one I don't think you can answer, and I'm not sure I can answer it, but
okay.
Her question is, does the San Francisco gift show in the summer offer books for sale? And
I cannot say. First of all,
the gift shows themselves, you don't sell books at gift shows. You present them, and people look at them, and they will take it home with them, and they will make a decision of whether or not to buy, but they don't buy actual books there in most cases. They might place an order, a gift shop might.
That's what I think is the only thing that's going to go on. There's no selling, as far as I know. Lots of giving away free samples. But
right.
The gift show is where retail establishments would come to place an order. That's my guess.
Right. And in most of these big gift shows, you would not want to go there and probably present yourself. I'm going to answer this question because I know a little bit about it. You're probably going to have a sales rep that's going to be attending that gift show that will have a booth and maybe present your book in their line of products, something like that. The chances of any of those gift shows for a small publisher with one book to present a book and hope to take a lot of orders is probably pretty small. Though I have seen some bigger publishers with a dozen or 100 gift books do a gift show and do an actual exhibit. But to attend a gift show and to get the chance to meet with some of the media might be a good idea, or to even see what the trends are for the coming season, things like that. So let's take I know there are some people listening on live, and there are also people listening via the web. If you're listening via the web, you can type in a question, and I will see it, and I will ask Amy it. Are there any people on the phone right now that would like to ask a question?
I would like to ask a question. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
My name is Patricia from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Patricia Gallagher from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I have a little Team of Angels pin. It's three little angels holding hands. that I developed when our family went through a tragedy about 9 years ago. And over the years, I've distributed $100,000, $50,000 that I sold, but always at the wrong prices. And the other $50,000 I gave away as a goodwill humanitarian thing, but it was really to get PR. And it was mentioned in Family Circle and the CBS Early Show, but everything's kind of on hold now. And I've tried so much in terms of publicity and haven't gotten any good reactions lately. And I really would like to sell this to someone that will be able to sell it for me, have someone... of course, I'm thinking like a Hallmark, but it has a track record. Over 100,000 are floating around. Family Circle, Women's World, USA Today, Gannett Wire, all covered stories about this woman that started this project. But I don't have a rep, and I haven't been able to sell it, you know, in large quantities.
Are you saying you're looking to sell your business, sell the business in its entirety?
I would like to do that. But I would also maybe, I have 20,000 remaining of the initial 120,000 run.
Mm-hmm.
I would like someone to buy those last 20,000 or to buy the business from me and take these poems that I wrote that are attached to an angel pin, a special angel pin, and put them in frames or on plates or on mugs or other products, other gifty type products.
Okay, for that, you're going to actually have to sell a license. I don't think Amy can probably talk to you too much about licensing.
No, not really. I mean, I know I've been to the big licensing show in New York out of curiosity and, you know, wanting just to inform myself a little bit. It sounds like that you need a professional in that area, an attorney to start with, to sort of figure out, do you license this as a, you know, if you have the trademark on it, and you own it to license, you can go that way. If you're interested in selling the business, then you need a business broker to talk to you about those options. I don't know if my particular expertise in media is going to help it at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a whole line of companies that do licensing. And what you might want to do is get a magazine called License.
Okay.
Which you can get, and it's free. There are also some licensing websites that you might go to look at. Probably the most important one might be the licensingworld.com.
Okay.
And then there's a whole bunch of different licensing agents. One of the most famous one is Alaska Mama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why she's called that. She's out in New York, and it's alaskamama.com. So, I mean, you know, there are some places like that that will do it. At some point, maybe I'll do a special teleseminar just on licensing and rights management. And actually, that's probably a good idea to do that because I have a lot of information I can give you on that, but it would be inappropriate to do too much in detail on that.
Right.
Something like that could be, you know, I remember there was a time, what was it, about 20 years ago, I think, when angels were just hot.
Right.
You saw all kinds of gift books on angels. You saw all kinds of products with angels and so on. But that was 20 years ago. Maybe it's time for a revival. I don't know.
Well, my story, really, I never gave a hoot about angels, and I wasn't especially religious, but my husband was going through a depression after being downsized from a major pharmaceutical company, and he jumped from a hospital window. And that first night, I was just overwhelmed, and I wrote a poem for myself, A Team of Angels for the Overwhelmed. And then every day I would sit in a church and write a new poem, A Team of Angels for Taking One Day at a Time. My husband survived, but with a lot of injuries. And over the 9 years that I've been doing the angel pins, I never had his permission to tell the truth. So I always said my husband was in an accident. So the story wasn't authentic. But about 3 weeks ago, when a neighborhood kid killed himself, John kind of came out of the closet, so to speak, and he said, I don't want this to happen to one more family. And he said, you can tell our story now. You know, and the story can help a lot of people. No, not so much the angel pins. That came out of just my own way of not being able to cope. But to be able to tell our story that we did miss every sign of depression, and we don't want that to happen to another family.
So on something like that, you may still sell the rights to somebody else for a book or the angel pins and so on, but you're still going to have to be very intimately involved because it's your story that really the product grew out of.
That's right. And 100,000 people have been touched, and I have 30,000 letters from people, a death row inmate, a mother of three children who were killed by a drunk driver, a kid over in Iraq showing me how he has it hidden under his flap, his name tag, on, sitting on a Humvee. But I don't know these people because the 50,000 that I did give away, on the back it said, kindly pass this along to someone who needs it more than you do. And that's how they spread from one person to another.
Now, have you... Okay, go ahead, Amy.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask, have you aligned yourself or developed any kind of formal relationship with any particular nonprofit that might, an organization that works with suicide in any way or that, because trying to figure out for a media angle. That would be, to me, it seems like the most logical first step is some kind of, doesn't have to be a financial arrangement, but something that you can join forces in a way that I cannot speak as a lawyer because I am not one, but I think that if you had some sort of formal agreement between the two of you, it becomes kind of a casual life sharing of the license where they can share in this story and you do joint PR and, just like outreach in some way, whether you're outreaching to buyers or outreaching, a portion of the proceeds benefit XYZ. And everyone likes to see a portion of the proceeds benefit XYZ. That makes everyone feel good, and in these situations they're looking at this item because they need to feel better about something. So touching the lives of people that you don't know, even if it's through portion of a proceeds donated, is still a good thing, and I think that it is picked up by the media in many cases, and it does help with with just purchasing in general, whether it's a gift shop buying it or not. That might be something to think about, and also, but anytime, you should own the trademark to anything that you, whatever the name of it is, you need to have that trademark because you don't want that taken from you. And to license anything, you must first own it to give it away or to sell it or to share it or to, and people want to make sure that everything's being done properly. And especially
my guess that something like this would work best if you had a combination of a book or small booklet along with the angel pens, that the small booklet telling the stories, having the poems, and for something like that, you might want to pitch it to Andrews McMeel or Running Press or Workman Publishing, because they all have done book gift packages, and they're all three active in those markets. Again, that's Andrews McMeel, Workman Publishing, and Running Press. And they're probably the three major ones that do that. Chronicle Press out of San Francisco does some of that, but not as much. We have a couple more questions that are coming from online. I'm not sure that Amy's going to be able to answer these questions, but I'll try to point you in it. One is from Mattia in Maryland, and she says, how would a self-published author get into the doors of retail giants such as Target or Walmart, especially around the holidays? How would one set up an interview with a buyer for these chains? The chances are that if you have just one book, you're not going to get an interview with any of these buyers. You're probably going to have to work through somebody that's already pitching them in some major way. If you go to my website at bookmarket.com/15.htm, that stands for chapter 15 of my book, 1001 Ways. I have a list of all the key places to go to contact these major chains, including Target, Walmart, Sam's, Best Buy, BJ's, and a number of others, so that you have some idea of who to go to. But the chances are you're going to need at least a good gift wrap and possibly somebody that specializes in actually going to these particular kinds of people. And a couple of those I do list in there. One of them was Advanced Marketing Services, which no longer exists, at least as a viable entity. But another one is Levy Home Entertainment, which is a wholesaler to that marketplace. But you could always try, even with one book, you could always try, contact Walmart or somebody like that on your own. But chances are you're going to need a gift wrap that goes to them on a regular basis. And your best bet then is to talk to somebody in your local area, your largest big city, because there are gift wraps in almost every big city.
They're everywhere.
Chicago, Kansas City, Dallas, Miami, Atlanta, New York, Boston, Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., Denver. Those are the major ones that have gift markets where you can go. So you can just look for the gift market. If you don't know where it is and you can't find it through your phone book, ask your Chamber of Commerce. And then go down there and or just go to your local gift stores in your area and ask them who is a good rep in the area. And then ask them for their phone number and then call those people and ask if they would be interested in repping your book to the gift market. Ideally, you should have a display or a package that you can sell them, either two or three books together or one book that with a high value that they might be interested in doing because they can make money off of it. It's very complicated to sell into the gift market with just one book in most cases.
Right. I would definitely concur with the going to your local places and asking for recommendations on reps. They know who follows up, who has their details, all their ducks in a row, and who's good to work with. And you know, those people are going to give you great recommendations. I also know a customer of mine, an associate of mine, RG Fisher, Zabel Fisher PR. She did a pretty extensive research project at some point last year for a client on getting into Target, and I think she compiled all that research into a report. And I don't have the link in front of me, but if anyone wants to email me, I can forward them on to Margie. It's a great resource. She really went all out for this client, figuring a lot of the. It's kind of tips and tricks, but there was definitely some surprises, some things that they thought about what it was going to be like to deal with Target didn't necessarily pan out, and they learned a lot along the way. So they have put that together, and I'm
so Amy, what's your email?
You can just email directly to me, Amy, A-M-Y, at giftlistmedia, that's giftlistmedia.com.
Okay,
if
great.
You can go to our site, the Giftlist Media, hit contact us. It goes to my tech support, but if you say, Amy, I need that information, they forward it to me, and I get it within that day and get back to you right away.
We have another question online. It's, as a self-publisher, is it advantageous to have a distributor for your book prior to trying to get the attention of the gift market segment? Again, it may not be a distributor. You may have to set up a network of sales reps if you're going into the gift market. There are a couple gift market distributors. Again, if you go to the bookmarket.com/15.htm, you'll find contacts for that kind of information for different gift segments and so on. You do need some sort of distribution probably before the gift media is going to be interested in you, because if you don't, they don't want to cover a book that nobody can get.
Important. That is one thing I definitely wanted when you were reading that question, just to make sure that this is said and heard and understood, that you cannot pitch something to the media that is not available in the area in which that media is distributed. If you did that, it did not, or misled them, or just were uninformed about that, and then it turns out that they run it and they get calls from their readership or their listening audience or viewing audience, and they cannot get a hold of it, they will never talk to you again. So this is very, very important. And having sufficient stock. People do not want to recommend a gift that when someone gets in their car and goes, spends their good, precious holiday time to get it and it is unavailable, is very frustrating, and people are very inclined to call back to that media and send in feedback that they were very frustrated. So that's really important. And I know, for example, Real Simple says right up front, if you do not have X number in stock, they have a very specific requirement that they don't want you to even pitch them. Don't even start the process. Oprah's the same way. You know, if you can't send her 400 units in, you know, FedEx overnight with no warning whatsoever, then this is not an outlet that you should be considering at this time. Also, don't pitch Carolina Woman if your book is not sold in any local bookstores in Carolina. So it's like those are the, you know, Austin Woman is not interested in a book that is not sold in the city of Austin. So these are very important things to remember. And any time you pitch any media, you have to include in them, you know, if it's local media, for sure, the addresses and names of the bookstores that carry your product. They want to know that, and they won't always take the time to come back to you to find that out. That needs to be clickable onto your online kit, or if it's in just a simple attachment on your email or a piece of paper included in your press kit. But where people can buy the book is definitely an important thing to know.
That's especially with local and regional media, because they really do need to know. But
they
the minute you're pitching national, they want to know that it's going to be available national.
They have
then you may not be able to list all the different outlets, but you have to at least indicate that there's a national distribution.
Right, and a listing of Barnes & Noble is sufficient. They know that that's national, and, you know, there's going to be a...
And Amazon is probably not sufficient.
It depends on the outlet.
Yeah.
And we always ask, is online okay? Sometimes they say, no, we like local, you know. Some people are just still favor brick and mortar for holiday and year-round, and some have let it go. And
well, and for magazines, though, that's important because
the
brick and mortar are carrying the magazine. The magazine has to support the brick and mortar.
Right.
You know,
right.
To some extent. I have another question. This is from Carol. She says, you mentioned that coffee table books can be easier to get into the holiday gift guides. What kind of gift media outlets are there that accept standard trade size books, probably trade paperback?
It's all going to be topic related because, like I said, it's not the book review editor. So if it is a fun piece of, like the traveling pants, you know, I mean, that's in paperback, but it appeals to a particular demographic. So the outlets that are interested in that are the outlets that are read by that demographic. So if it's a political book, if it's a, you know, it just really depends on the topic. You're looking to match the readership of the outlet with the readership of your book. So it isn't that they wouldn't cover it because it's not hardcover or coffee table book. It's that it needs to have that good matchup. So I think people who are giving I can't even recall why I brought up the coffee book specifically, but I think it's just more about coffee table books photograph well, and high glossy magazines like products that photograph well. So I think that was the point I was making. But
you do have to have a good book cover. There's no question about that, and it's got to look good. It's got to photograph well. It's got to look like an attractive book that you would want to pick up.
Right.
I think that's probably essential.
That's probably something that you're considering just from your initial marketing and having the book on a display. You know, the media is going to come after that decision, but, you know, you picked red and green for your book cover, so, you know, definitely people think about what the media is going to be interested in. It might not necessarily change how they design their dust jacket, but a fun title is just as good as anything else if it really is going to appeal to the particular readership. Something that has it could be a particular topic, or it just has slang to it, or it just has very, you know, have more high level, something that maybe Wired magazine might be interested in, something really cutting edge in the world of technology, or something very, very current in the political scheme of things that would is just being released around Thanksgiving. You know, you could definitely pitch those real short lead outlets.
One of the points you're making that I think is real important for people to hear is just the idea that when you're going to the gift list media, the gift media, you really do have to customize your pitch to that particular media because you've got both upscale and downscale, and you've got different kinds of subject areas. You've got regional versus national. And if you were to send the same news release and media package to everybody with no cover letter that, pitches it directly to that media, your chances of getting picked up are much less.
Much less. Oh, absolutely. That's why I think I hope we have driven that point home. We've brought it up a number of times, that targeting specific information to the specific outlet is your key to opening that door. It's so important that they can see the connection between what you're pitching and their readership. Wanting to make that connection solid is well worth your time. I mean, if you really want to do that, sitting down, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel 1,000 times, but you need to group those outlets in a way that makes sense. And I think you touched on this just for a second, but it's another thing to mention too, that price point is another way to target is not just readership in terms of maybe gender, but readership in terms of age, as well as readership in terms of affluence. A beautiful coffee table book about, you know, Murano glass is not going to fly in a particular region that just cannot afford anything like that. It's going to be picked up so much more by a maybe regional magazine in Boca Raton. I mean, those are the kinds of things that, and that might just be very oversimplifying it, but a book on, you know, the 101 best bargain shopping tips for on internet shopping, you know, you can definitely say, all right, bargain hunting, we've got an age range here, and we can look at the country and sort of maybe pick out some regionality that might like that, and editors will come out and say, you know, we're looking for things that appeal to people who are looking for affordable gifts. So if your book is under $20, then you could always pitch it as a great gift under $20, regardless of what it's about. Just by the fact that your book's under $20 makes it an affordable gift. Someone on their list is going to want it.
Even under $5 or whatever it might
exactly.
be.
Exactly. And all of those price points. We always ask at holiday. Doesn't seem to be as relevant for springtime, but for holiday it does. And you look at Women's Day. They put out 3 different gift guides. I mean, Women's Day has a holiday gift guide. They have a new issue on the stands, it seems, every other day. They put out under 50, under 20, under 100, 3 different gift guides that are 100% based on nothing but price point. There's no others. That's what they do, and a lot of the newspapers do the same thing. They love gifts under $20. No one likes a gift guide better than the gift guides that are under $20. I mean, it doesn't matter what your book's about if you're pitching price point. And that might be a fallback position where, like, I have nothing to say to the Detroit Free Press, but they're looking for gifts under $50, and mine qualifies, so I am going to pitch that angle and move forward with that. So price point is important, and also topic in terms of the affluence or the lack thereof in a particular region in the country is something that you can pitch separate from the topic of your book to target, further target.
Amy, I know we're coming up on 2 o'clock, so, I mean, whatever time, 2 o'clock, I guess, your time. So we have 2 minutes. I wanted you to just talk a little bit about that Spotlight branding data.
No, I know, we didn't get through to that. Basically, what the gift list does is cover media contacts for editorial review. This is someone offering an opinion, an editorial on your product, whether it's, you know, recommending it in some way. Spotlight branding covers a database of production staff, of people that are looking for products to build their sets with. And this is anything from, you know, floor covering to refrigerators to end tables to jewelry to fashion to anything that you would see on a set. And if you actually took a good look at any of your favorite TV shows and paused and examined the inordinately high number of consumer products that are everywhere, I mean, to dress a set to make it actually look like it is real is a insurmountable task, and they are looking for thousands of products. And the wardrobe stylists love to have things on hand. And Spotlight branding goes through all of those. We go through all the feature films and all the television shows that accept consumer products for placement. And we take it from the perspective of the publicist, where you're not looking to sign a big branding deal. You are looking to just get exposure because you don't have a huge budget necessarily. So we want to make sure that a big chunk of these leads are for simple trade, no money exchange. This is, you supply us with the jewelry, we will put the jewelry on the actress, and once that has hit the air, then it's up to you to run with it. You need to get stills from the shoot and pitch it to People Magazine and Star Magazine, yada, yada. And you'll see that, and I have a lot of clippings of customers that have done that. And, you know, celebrity connection is something you can run with far.
And that's, you know, getting your book into a TV show or into a celebrity hand or into a movie is certainly a way to build the gift market potential of the book.
Right. You got to really tie in the book title with the character, though. I would say books
right.
are have a little bit different, you know, Sub-Zero can put a refrigerator on the set. It doesn't have, you know, I mean, as long as the people can conceivably afford it, that's all they need to know. But book titles, you really want to come up with something clever and you want to know that character. You don't want to write a scene for them, but you want to be able to come up with a really good reason why this book should be on the bedside table of that character, or why when she's sitting on the beach, she's got a copy of that in her hands. And magazines are very good at placing their magazines in the hands of TV shows, and once you start looking for it, you'll notice what a good job they actually do of it. But books can be a little bit harder, but they do use them quite a bit. I mean, books are all over. Any set that takes place at home, there's always books. And you might not necessarily be able to get a good view of it. I mean, for someone to be holding it right up to the camera, that's, you know, going to really, you're going to have to really...
Highly unlikely.
It's going to have to be scripted in, and that's going to take more than what you might be up for at the moment. But if it's on the set and you can get a still image from it, you can publicize the event. It's not that you're going to make sales from people who are watching that particular episode, but you can then run with the fact that it was selected by the set designer. And now you can say
seen on TV.
Absolutely. That is very important. And a lot of magazines love to have that at the onset of that pitch letter, that this project was seen on TV, because that's all they cover. You know, so many magazines that's all they want is it has to be connected to some form of entertainment. And, you know,
right.
If you can pull the entertainment connection, that's one way to do it. So, that's basically what Spotlight Branding does. And we try to make it very, very friendly, because I think that people have a lot of hesitation. There's a lot of jitters when they think about calling the production office of any feature film or TV show. But they're, you know, if you've called a busy newsroom, believe me, this is nothing.
So, Amy, I know we're running a little bit over. So, is there any last minute thing you want to tell people? Because I do want to try to keep this to not much more over an hour.
Right. No,
I know you have to go.
We both have pending schedules to deal with. But I think that if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to book some time on the phone to talk about whatever you're interested in pitching and let you know if it's a good fit for any of the products and services that we have. I'm more than happy to do that. Everything's pretty much outlined on the website, but I'll be the first to say if I think that my product is not a good fit for you, because the last thing I want is unhappy customers wasting their time. That doesn't bode well for me, and it's not something that I want to promote. So I'm more than happy to do that. You can always shoot me an email. I usually can get back to emails within the same day. Phone calls might take me a little bit longer, but I'm available, I guess, to your audience as much as they need me to be.
And please note that she isn't an expert in getting distribution or product placement in stores. She's really focused on getting you into the media.
Right, absolutely.
So,
and if you would, yeah.
If you have questions on the other, those should be sent to me. And I'll try to answer them. Anyway, Amy, I wanted to thank you for coming, and I do want to wrap it up now, just because I know you have something to do, and I know I do too. So thank you all for attending.
Well,
I really appreciate it. This teleseminar, again, will be available to re-listen at any time you want at the same web address that you went to, and I will put it in the newsletter again to let people know. But thank you for attending. Amy, thanks for the wonderful content that you provided and the inspiration. And I do hope that some people get into some good holiday gift guides for the coming year.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, it's been my pleasure. And thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And so Amy, again, is with giftlistmedia.com. So thanks a lot, and have a good day. Bye-bye, Amy. Thanks a lot.
Bye.